You're listening to the Assembly Call IU podcast and postgame show, the place where Indiana fans across the globe hang out online after every IU basketball game. Join us for our live broadcasts on Thursday nights and immediately following every IU game at our website, assemblycall.com. That's assemblycall.com. This episode of the Assembly Call is brought to you by SeatGeek. As you know, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is by far the easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets because I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats, and I plan to use this. My wife and I have a 17-month-old, haven't been a lot of nights out recently, but we plan to have one soon, and we will definitely be using SeatGeek to find concert tickets so that we can go out and enjoy a nice evening. And we know that SeatGeek will make the ticket buying experience easier than ever because it saves us time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And best of all, Assembly Call listeners get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code ASSEMBLY today, and you will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That is promo code ASSEMBLY, A-S-S-E-M-B-L-Y. Welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important IU basketball stories from the past 7 days. This is our 60th edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 374th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of Thursday, January 19th, 2018. I am your host, Jared Morris, and let's begin this week how we begin every episode of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment. And this week's banner moment takes us back to Sunday's game against Northwestern, and it would be easy to choose any number of things that actually happened in that game as the banner moment for how great of a performance that was and how well Indiana played, especially in the second half. But I'm going to go with something for the banner moment that happened off the court, in the stands, and that is Romeo Langford attending the game. I don't know if it was necessarily expected. You know, news kind of broke 15, 20 minutes before tip started that he was there. And obviously for Indiana, a program that has invested a lot in his recruitment, one of the best players to ever come out of the state of Indiana, to get a visit from Romeo to the game, you know, without his parents, with some friends, to go up, take in the atmosphere, talk to the coaches, you know, hang out again, is a really good sign. Obviously, he hasn't had a chance yet to go to Vanderbilt or to go to Kansas, so this is kind of the one game that he's seen of his three finalists, and it gave me a little bit more optimism that Indiana really is a contender here. And obviously there has been nothing said publicly that would suggest otherwise, but just some of maybe the momentum of the chatter has seemed to suggest that maybe Vanderbilt, you know, had a little bit of momentum, and you kind of hadn't heard a lot about Indiana. But a big part of that is just because Romeo and his father play things pretty close to the vest. And so in terms of, you know, actual actions that you can read and maybe read something into, I think this is the best sign yet that Indiana is a legitimate contender in this recruitment. And obviously, few things would be as big of a banner moment as Romeo Langford someday committing to Indiana. So that is the banner moment for this week. All right, let me now introduce my esteemed co-host for this week's show. To my left, we have one of the world's most respected bracketologists who recently released his second bracket projections of the season over at InsideTheHall.com, and he is the longtime president of the Robert Johnson Fan Club. He is Andy Bottoms. Andy, what is your bottoms line on the past week in IU basketball?
Oh, well, you guys will probably be surprised to note that many people who read Inside the Hall were not a fan of how many SEC teams I had in the projected field. So
shocking.
That was a stunner.
Are the responses a little bit different now that it's on Inside the Hall as opposed to assemblycall.com?
I can't really imagine what it would be like if IU worked its way close enough to be in the discussion. Now, I certainly, from a fan's perspective, hope that happens. But for now, it was largely like, there's no way the Big Ten only gets four teams in, and there's no way the SEC gets that many teams in. But that's probably the least shocking thing that's happened all week. You know, when you think about the schedule, you know, kind of I tried to just put the Wisconsin game, you know, out of my mind. And so you kind of look at that three game segment that's happened since then, and a lot of good things have happened for IU. They've played really well. And if you break the rest of the season down into three game segments, there's some kind of interesting groupings there. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the schedule, but you know, the game against Michigan State really starts another interesting three game stretch. It could probably go any number of ways. You know, you've got the road game against Michigan State, you've got a home game against the Maryland team who's got some injuries, but is still, you know, played fairly well, played, you know, lost a tough game at Michigan earlier in the week. And then you've got on the road against Illinois, who hasn't won a Big Ten game yet, but has come awfully close, has a, you know, some overtime losses on there. So, you know, if you're looking for potential road wins in the Big Ten, it feels like one that maybe you could get, but it's going to be a tough one. And so if you come out of that stretch at 2-1, which I think is probably, you know, on the optimistic, maybe not on the optimistic side, maybe on the realistic side of that, you really continue that momentum and you're at the midway point and you're 6-3 and can feel pretty good about it. And that next three game stretch is a bear with, you know, Purdue at Ohio State and then Michigan State in there, but the two of those three come at home. And then you kind of get to that point in the season at the end where you've got a couple three game stretches at the end that we've, you know, kind of looked at earlier in the season and said, you know, things kind of ease up. Some of those things may not look the same as they did now. And in terms of that home game against Ohio State, certainly looks tougher than it did. But, you know, if you look at the KenPom rankings of some of the teams down there, there's a stretch of five in a row that are outside the top 60. So, you know, you kind of look at it that way. And I think this next three game stretch, which occurs in a matter of 6 days, is going to be really important about this team. And I'm interested to see how they build on that momentum with having, you know, a little bit of extra time, a lull in games a little bit leading up to it. Now we've got a big three-game stretch, and you know, between this show and the next time we record, and I think we'll, you know, we continue to learn about this team. I think we'll know a lot more even after this next the next week. It's certainly a big one for the guys, and looking forward to talking about some of the games coming up and seeing how they perform.
Absolutely. All right, and to my right, we have a man who firmly believes that he would be the second best quarterback in the NFL's Final Four if the Jaguars, Vikings, or Eagles want to sign him right now. He's a columnist for The Big Lead. And he gleefully looks forward to the day when Dean Spanos and his sons come looking for him, ready to rumble in retaliation for all of his trash talk, like they're James Harden and Chris Paul looking for Austin Rivers. He is Ryan Phillips. Ryan, what is your rant from the past week in Indiana basketball?
Bring it on, Dean. you know, I wasn't on the show because of the NFL playoffs. I was working. I wasn't on the show after Indiana's thorough beatdown of Northwestern. I thought that was the best performance, the 66-46 win. I thought it was the best performance of the Archie Miller era. I thought defensively that was just phenomenal. I know Northwestern is not, you know, the measuring stick you put yourself up against in the Big Ten, but that was an excellent performance that would have, I think, if they played like that, they would have beat anybody in the Big Ten, including Michigan State. That was just a thoroughly dominant performance on that end. And then offensively, they seem to really get some stuff going in the second half against that zone. I tweeted out that having Juwan Morgan was the key. And once he was back in, I mean, they just really ate up that zone and tore him apart. But I think the bigger picture here is you look at where Indiana is right now. They've won three straight. They've won 5 of 6 and they've won 6 of 8. I mean, don't look now, but they are playing better. Yeah, one of the losses in there was Fort Wayne, and then you had that dreadful second half against Wisconsin. But people forget they were leading at halftime of that game. That second half was a complete letdown. But at the same time, they played half of that game pretty well. It reminded me a bit of the first half, second half against Michigan. First half was awful. Second half, they actually played pretty well. They just dug themselves such a hole that it was impossible to come out of. So when you're looking at the way this team's playing right now and you look at how they performed at Northwestern, that win is exactly how Archie Miller wants his team to play. Tough, hard-nosed defense, make your free throws, be the, you know, don't turn the ball over, be solid offensively. You don't have to be spectacular if you're getting stops. You don't have to be perfect. And I think that that is so different than what we've seen in the past with this team, where it seemed they always had to be perfect offensively to win games. And you kind of watch that game and you're like, oh, so that's what Archie's going for. I think that we all know that, but actually seeing it happen, you're kind of like, this all makes sense now, what they've been trying to do. Obviously, this week going at Michigan State is going to be very difficult. But what I would say about this game is Indiana has nothing to lose. Michigan State has not been playing well. There is a high potential for a very angry Michigan State team to step on that floor, which is never a good recipe. And Indiana has felt the brunt of that several times in the last few years. They have nothing to lose, and what they need to focus on is not necessarily winning that game, because if you focus on solely winning it, you're going to come out disappointed. I think Michigan State's going to win that game. But you have to focus on turning in a good performance that you can look at and say, look, we played a better team, but we played well. And we, you know, kind of like against Duke, they knew they were probably going to lose that game, you know, when all was said and done. But they turned in a performance you can build off of and you can build momentum off of. That's what they need to do at Michigan State. They need to turn in a performance they can build off of, whatever that is. I don't know, you know, if it's a score thing, if it's just playing good defensively, something. They need something to continue the momentum and build off of, regardless of the final score.
All right, so here's what we're going to discuss this week. We will touch upon the schedule gauntlet coming up a little bit more here. We will also talk about the keys to pulling off the upset in East Lansing, even though Ryan just told you that it's not going to happen. We'll tell you what it would take for it to happen, or, you know, for Indiana to make that a competitive game. We also will talk about the transfer rule if we have time, and then we got a bunch of questions from you all that we are excited to answer, including an interesting one about attendance. And then a demand that we get down to brass tacks and predict where Romeo will end up. So we'll see if we get to that one. All of that coming here on Assembly Call Radio. Before we move forward, a quick reminder that the next time you are looking for tickets to a sporting event or a concert, remember our friends at SeatGeek. You can download their app, which is great, which I have on my phone. It's really convenient and easy to use. Or if you just want an easy-to-remember URL that will take you directly to the IU basketball ticket listings on SeatGeek's website, this is the URL, iutickets.shop. So if you want tickets to any of Indiana's upcoming home games, obviously the Purdue game, home game is coming up against the top five Boilermakers. You know, if you want to go to that game or any of the other games remaining on Indiana's schedule, go to iutickets.shop. You will find it there. That is where you can find out the latest deals on IU tickets, and you can do it at that URL, or you can use the SeatGeek app, whichever one is more convenient for you. And if it's your first time using SeatGeek, don't forget the promo code ASSEMBLY. Use it when you make your first purchase, and you will get $20 back after that purchase. Again, the promo code is ASSEMBLY, A-S-S-E-M-B-L-Y. You are listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips talking IU basketball. So, Andy, you mentioned the schedule gauntlet that is coming up, and Archie talked about that in his media availability today, saying that the gauntlet we will have to go through that no team in our league will have to endure over the next 3 weeks. Basically, it's 7 games in 17 days. I calculated it out. Over the next 23 days, including today, we will have 12 live broadcasts. That might, I'm pretty sure that's a record since we started the show. So
yeah, more than likely it is.
It's going to be hectic. You know, Ryan, as you look at this, what do you think is the key for Indiana to keep its head above water during this gauntlet? I mean, obviously, you know, and three of the games are against, you know, two against Michigan State, one against Purdue, all games where you could play really well in and still lose all three of them. So what does Indiana need to do to keep the momentum going despite the challenge of what they have coming up?
I thought you were going to ask, what's the key for us to actually make it through these? And I was going to say hydration, Jared, hydration always.
Yes.
And sleep. Yeah. You know, eating three squares a day, all that. I think that it has to be the defense. I think that they're going to be outmanned, outsized in a lot of those games, pretty clearly. I think it's just going to be the defense. They have to continue to buy into that aggressive man-to-man defense where everyone helps each other out. And Ryan Carrazza at Inside the Hall did a great job of breaking that down in his film session this week. Not only how they broke down Northwestern's zone, but how they were able to help and recover on defense and the commitment to help and recover on defense. And, you know, just make their opponents, take contested shots. That's all it is. You make them take contested shots. If a team beats you by making a ton of contested shots, they were going to win anyway. But at least you're giving yourself a chance. And I think that the keys against Michigan State, against Purdue, against Ohio State, it's going to be, you know, aggressive defense and without fouling too. You've got to stay on, you got to have your best players on the floor, and then rebounding and not giving second chance points to teams like Michigan State and Ohio State that seem to thrive off of that. I think that you just have to, again, just play. And I've been harping on it all year, but just play sound fundamental basketball. Don't turn the ball over. Don't give them transition opportunities and easy baskets. Don't give them easy baskets, you know, when you're on defense. and then, you know, do things like make your free throws and make your, when you get opportunities at the rim, you've got to finish them. You can't, you know, miss layups. It's basically, it's so simplistic, but the way this team plays, if you just do the easy things, you make the game easy for yourself. And I think that is the, you know, you can only control what you can control. And that's defense, free throws, making layups, you know, and blocking your guy out, getting a rebound. I mean, those are the things you can control. You can't control a talent advantage. You really can't. You can't control a road crowd. I mean, those are the things you can control. If they do that, they're at least going to be competitive in these games. They don't have to win them. I mean, you know, I mean, we know what this is. We know this is a building year.
Okay, how many do you think they need to win? Because if you look at the KenPom schedule, you know, on individual game-by-game basis, they're all predicted as losses. Now, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean, obviously, that's going to happen.
All of them?
All of them, because you got at Michigan State, you have home against Maryland, where Indiana has a 43% chance of winning, at Illinois. I mean, your two quote-unquote easy games in this stretch are still road games, at Illinois and at Rutgers. That's what I mean. You could play well in all of these games and conceivably lose them. You know, what is reasonable, or what would you expect?
Andy and I were talking about this before we went on the air. I think you got to beat Maryland at home. I think that's a very winnable game. Maryland, it just doesn't seem like they have it together this year. They're talented, but they don't have it together. I think you got to win on the road at Illinois too. I know that can sometimes be a tough place to play, but that team is not playing well. I think you got to win on the road there, and I think you got to beat Rutgers. Those are must win games for me. If you want to, you know, be in the mix in the Big Ten. I mean, you gotta remember right now, Indiana is one of the few teams that is two games over 500 in or better in the Big Ten. I mean, they're one of five teams, and you know, regardless of whether or not it's a tournament worthy season, you want to look at the standings and see yourself in that top four, top five, just as a point of pride. I mean, you can, even if you don't make the tournament, you can look back on that and say, hey, we had a pretty decent year considering what we had to deal with. You know, and so that's what you have to aim for. I think beating Maryland, beating Illinois, beating Rutgers, those are things you have to do if you want to be in that area of the conference. And then, you know, you roll the dice against Michigan State, against Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan State again. You don't, you just go in there and you have nothing to lose. You pick up one win in those three games, and the season's starting to look a lot better.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. Coming up on the Assembly Call, we're going to jump in and talk IU Michigan State, provide keys to victory based on the template provided by Ohio State, Rutgers, and Michigan, who have all played Michigan State tough recently. That's coming up. Hey, just a real quick note here. The next time that you are going to shop online for IU gear, use the URL iustore.shop. That will take you to the official IU online store where they have anything you could possibly want. Candy stripe pants, the Script Indiana warm-up shirt, all kinds of IU gear. And that URL, iustore.shop, is actually our affiliate URL. So when you use it and buy something, we get paid a commission. So it's a great way for you to shop for the IU gear that you need and to support the Assembly Call at the same time. Again, the URL is iustore.shop. Please bookmark it and use it the next time you're looking to buy IU gear. We appreciate it. Now back to the show. You are listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips. Don't forget that if you ever have to miss all or part of an episode of Assembly Call Radio, there are two great ways to catch up. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Assembly Call. Or you can join our live Thursday night broadcast or watch the video replays by subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/assemblycall. And YouTube videos always have a little bit extra, some extra content that doesn't make it into the podcast, if you're into that. So check us out on YouTube as well. All right, guys, let's talk about this Michigan State game coming up. And, you know, obviously it's a big challenge for Indiana. I believe Michigan State is favored by 16. I think everybody agrees that, you know, the fact that Michigan State is actually coming off three kind of poor performances, but then had 5 days to just be with Coach Izzo to try and get those fixed, means we're probably catching them at the wrong time, not the right time. We'll obviously find that out on Friday. But, you know, let's obviously assume Indiana goes up there with a puncher's chance. What will it take for Indiana to make this a competitive game? And, you know, I had the opportunity to talk with Brendan Quinn on Podcast on the Brink this week, who covers Michigan State and Michigan for The Athletic. And one of the things that he said was going to be a big key, and that, you know, Ohio State did and that Michigan did, was really play tough physical defense. And this obviously bodes well for Indiana because we've been doing this much more lately. But he said, especially against Miles Bridges, really make him work. Keep him off the glass, out of the lane. He's been a guy who's been very happy to shoot threes this year. And obviously you want him to continue to do that because he's such a good athlete, so good around the basket when he kind of plays with a purpose going to the basket. So I think the first question that I will throw to you guys is, who do you start on Miles Bridges? You know, my first instinct is you start Zach McRoberts on him. And maybe you even rotate Robert Johnson onto him for certain possessions. We've seen Robert Johnson guard bigger players if, you know, they're a really big offensive threat. And obviously he'll have his hands full with Michigan State's backcourt. So who knows if that'll happen. But what do you think, Andy? What do you do with Miles Bridges? And then obviously in the background, we'll have to talk about Nick Ward and Jaren Jackson and Cassius Winston. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys to try and handle on this Michigan State team.
Yeah, it's kind of a domino effect when you start figuring out, well, if you put this guy on this person and then you kind of rotate through. I tend to agree. I mean, let's assume that IU goes with the same starting lineup that they've been going with. Feels like McRoberts, he's got, you know, a little bit taller than Robert at, you know, 6'5", 6'6". Just really active. And quite honestly, he's a guy you can put out there and say, look, your only focus in this game is to harass him and make things tough for him. And hopefully, you know, bait him into shooting some three-pointers. I mean, he's shooting almost 6 threes a game, which is astounding to me, and hitting 34% of them. So, again,
I think he's trying to show off for NBA scouts.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, between, you know, playing him more at the three and having him shoot a bunch of threes, it certainly feels that way. So I would guess it's McRoberts, but I do think, you know, a lot of times Robert Johnson has been put on, you know, the better perimeter players. You know, Bridges is interesting. While I don't think he really is a perimeter player, he's kind of playing like one in some ways. So you might see a little bit of that. But I think as you go into the stretch, you know, you talked about this a little bit before the break. I mean, IU can't afford to not have Juwan Morgan and Robert Johnson on the floor against these teams. And, you know, you saw how important Morgan was against Northwestern. I think Johnson is in a similar category. And so, do you just do what you need to do to kind of keep those guys out of a position to get themselves in foul trouble?
Okay, so let's talk then about Nick Ward, because I listened to Tom Izzo's press conference, and he talked about how important it is for them to establish Nick Ward, and specifically lower on the block. He said one of the problems Ward has been having in these last few games is he's catching the ball too far away from the basket. And so if what Izzo says is a key for the game and something that he's been talking about to the team, I would assume they're really going to try and establish Ward down low on the block, and why wouldn't they? It's been such an effective form of offense for them this year. But you look at these last three games. In the Ohio State game, Ward played 26 minutes, scored 3 points, had only one field goal attempt, and turned it over 3 times. In the Rutgers game, which they did win, even though Rutgers took him to overtime, he played 34 minutes and scored 17 points, was the best player on the floor for them. And in the Michigan game, again, it was back to kind of bad Ward. He played 14 minutes, only had 4 points, just 3 field goal attempts, and turned it over 3 times. So obviously, Indiana's going to have to play physical with him and try as much as they can to not allow him to establish that presence on the block. And this is clearly where not having a big, strong body like Deron Davis is going to hurt. But then I would assume that they're going to have to be quick with double teams on Ward, because, you know, maybe you start with Juwan Morgan on him, but now you really put Juwan Morgan at risk of getting fouls. And we saw what can happen in that Northwestern game if you don't have Morgan out there. So I even wonder if maybe they put Justin Smith on Ward and then try and double. I mean, what do you do? Or do you put Morgan on him and expect that Juwan is going to be able to play without fouling, which, to his credit, he has shown that he can do plenty this year. Who wants this? Either one of you.
I think you got to start Juwan on him. But I do think it's going to be a lot of help. And I think that Justin Smith maybe on Jaren Jackson and he helps down and you bait Jackson to sort of maybe become a jump shooter. I know he shoots 43% from three, but he's a guy who, you know, if you're going to pick your poison with that team, you're going to have it be, you know, probably in that starting lineup, have him be the guy that you're going to help off of a little bit and just hope that as a freshman, he doesn't, you know, dominate the game. Again, it's pick your poison. It really is, because they've got so many talented players who are all big, who are all strong, who can all hurt you in a number of ways. So I think that you've got to put your best player, who right now is Juwan Morgan, you've got to put him on Nick Ward and just hope that he stays out of foul trouble. I think that if you get Colin Hartman in the game, then you can maybe rotate him down and move, you know, Morgan off of Ward to give him a break, put him on Jaren Jackson.
And McSwain and will obviously guard Ward when he's in the game.
Yeah, when he's in the game. But, you know, it's either way, you're going to look at it and say, oh, I don't think they should be doing that. I think they should do it this way. I mean, there are reasons you can go with it anyway. But look, if I'm on the road and I'm going to have any puncher's chance at this, you got to put Morgan in there on Ward, because, you know, based on Izzo's comments, that's what they're going to try and do, is pound it inside. And that's what they should do. That's what I would do against a team that is as height challenged as Indiana. I think you're going to have to see Clifton Moore in the game as well, and just using his length and trying not to, you know, commit fouls. So, we'll see. I think you probably have to roll with your best player on Ward.
You know, go ahead.
I would go the other way. I would let Justin Smith try to guard him, and I think they're definitely going to double. He struggled with that a little bit in the Michigan game. I think if putting Morgan on him guaranteed that he tried to guard Morgan on the other end, which it doesn't. I think if you did that, then you would probably
just
do
guarding
it.
Morgan. I think.
I think it would be Jaren Jackson would be my guess, but
Jackson's incredible block rate.
But I think if you could do that, because, you know, if you look at two of those three games, and the Rutgers game is the one I watched the least of, you know, Ohio State had, you know, Caleb Wesson in there who, you know, looks like he's Terrence Dials wearing that 34 jersey for Ohio State. Like, just, you know, big guy, just, you know, can really bang with Moore probably, or with Ward, similar to what we would say Deron Davis could have done. But then you had the Michigan game where he really struggled because he couldn't guard anybody, and he couldn't guard Wagner on the perimeter, and he couldn't handle, you know, the ball screens that Michigan State run. So if you think of it that way, obviously IU falls more in the latter category, and I don't think there's any way that he would really be able to guard Morgan. But again, they'll probably put him on Justin Smith, and hopefully Smith's ability to, who is he going to guard?
If they're smart, they'll put Ward on McRoberts and let McRoberts shoot. Yeah. I think that's what I would do. It's a tricky move because McRoberts isn't a post player. You know, a traditional post player. That's how I'd start it, though, because he's your weakest defender. You put it on the weakest offensive guy and see what happens. I start the game out that way.
That would be interesting to see. So I don't know. I mean, I would go a different way. I could certainly see IU putting Morgan on. I think regardless of who it is, we've seen IU against a lot of opponents really run doubles at post guys a lot more than I think we've seen in the last few years. So I think that is a given. Try to get him to force some turnovers out of it. Michigan State has turned the ball over a lot over the course of the season, and IU's been pretty good at forcing them in Big Ten play. So I think that is that's the thing I'm the most sure of as part of this discussion. Anything else is anybody's guess at this point.
You're listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips. So let's talk about some other things that all three of these teams, Ohio State, Rutgers, and Michigan, were able to do, which allowed Ohio State and Michigan to get wins against this Michigan State team and Rutgers to go to overtime. Because, again, you know, you talk about all this talent, and you look at Michigan State's roster, and it's overwhelming, and you think, you know, you can talk yourself into how are we going to come within 30 of these guys? And yet they're 1-2 in their last three games. The one win was an overtime win over Rutgers at home. So they are not unbeatable. They are prone to inconsistencies. And obviously you have to hope that they don't play at their best. But some things Indiana can do to really improve their chances. Number one, the Hoosiers are going to have to off a defensive rebound, because Michigan State is fourth in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. They're getting about 38% of their misses. But against Ohio State, Rutgers, and Michigan, they were under 30% in all of those games. So all three of those teams kept them off the offensive glass. And that's a positive for Indiana, because going back to the Wisconsin game, the Hoosiers gave up an offensive rebounding percentage of 46.4% to Wisconsin, but then against Minnesota, Penn State, and Northwestern, it was all under 30. And so Indiana's defensive rebounding has been getting a lot better. That's one of the things that they're going to have to do. The other thing that they're going to have to do is they've got to play tough and smart around the rim, and don't get discouraged by getting their shots blocked, because it's going to happen. This is something else that Brendan Quinn talked about on Podcast on the Brink. And they can't get discouraged and start settling for threes. All right, if you want to be a little more terrified of Michigan State, they are number one in the country in block percentage. They block 20% of opponent shots, which is crazy. They are number one in the country in two-point field goal defense, holding opponents to 35.5%. And they are number one in the country in effective field goal percentage allowed, 41.1%. Now, Ohio State, Rutgers, Michigan, they all shot much better on twos than what Michigan State has been giving up for the year. So, and they didn't start settling for threes. You might think, okay, Ohio State and Michigan, they probably were draining a bunch of threes. Both of those teams took only 15 threes And they made a high percentage of them. I think Ohio State made 7, Michigan made 6. So they made a high percentage of them, but they weren't settling. They kept going inside and not getting discouraged by getting their shots blocked. So for an Indiana team that has gotten a little bit too three-point happy, even in these recent wins, but a team that is in the top 50 in two-point field goal percentage, shooting 53.8%, they can't go away from their strength just because Michigan State's strength is that on defense. So let me kick that to you, Ryan. What is it going to take for Indiana to still be able to go at their strength, focus on getting the ball inside, and not settle for threes even against a defense like Michigan State's?
Well, you're going to have to make shots. You're going to have to make some tough shots to have a chance to win. And I know that's a very Tom Crean line to say, but it's true. You're going to have to make some tough shots to beat this team. And you're also going to have to finish through contact and get to the free throw line. And those are things that, you know, don't often happen against Michigan State. It's a very, very good team. So I think that, yeah, rebounding is the absolute key. That's number one. Number two, as I said before, contested shots. You gotta make them, and you gotta cause them when you're on defense. But also, you're gonna have to hit a couple threes to stay in range. You're gonna have to. I mean, they did it against Northwestern, but I don't think anybody who has watched this team has a ton of confidence that they're gonna stand out there and bury some threes. But you're on the road; it's a tough environment. You're gonna need some momentum-changing shots to go down, and those tend to happen from the three-point line. So. Yeah. I also think that just offensively, you've got to cut really hard. These are basic things, but you've got to cut really hard, get some backdoor baskets, you know, easy things. And then when you do get layups, like I said, you got to make them, and you got to make them through contact, because there will be contact, and there won't be foul calls with that contact. You know, I mean, you've got to just man up and try and make them. And that's the toughest part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, from my perspective, one of the things I used done really well lately was, you know, movement off the ball. And I think, you know, that's going to be a big factor in being able to do that. That second half against Northwestern zone, the 2-3 pass sequences that they were able to string together with, you know, Johnson and Hartman and Morgan in there, I think were really important. And that's, you know, ultimately why, you know, that was one of those that really proves how important Juwan Morgan is. He was really the catalyst for everything that they were running through him, even if he didn't score. So I think they've got to continue to have guys cut. That's really given them a lot of easy baskets, even against teams that block shots well. Robert Johnson got a lot of shots going to the basket in the Minnesota game. Obviously didn't have the same shot blockers in there that they've had a lot of the season, but they were able to get good looks going to the rim because of good, you know, good screening and good movement off the ball. So I think that becomes really important in that regard. But yeah, you can't get sucked into a three-point shooting contest. Even if Michigan State comes out and makes a few, if Bridges comes out, shoots a bunch and, you know, makes a couple early, you know, water will find its level there with him, I think, and IU just can't get, you know, there's not too many scenarios where they're going to win a game that they shoot a ton of threes.
Yeah, and I think the other big key is don't turn it over, and that's obvious when you're on the road, but, you know, especially you look at these last three games. I mean, Michigan State, they don't force a lot of turnovers. In fact, they're 291st in the country, but even as few as they typically force, Ohio State, Rutgers, and Michigan all turned it over even less than that. So, I mean, you know, obviously that is one way that you help compensate for the fact that you're probably going to shoot a lower percentage is you just get more possessions and get more shots up. And so Indiana has been better from a turnover perspective. This is going to be a real test against this defense in this environment if they can keep doing that. So final thoughts here for this segment, fellas. I mean, Ryan, you kind of gave us your thoughts. I mean, your kind of your gut feeling. I mean, as you head into this game, like, do you have at all like maybe a quiet confidence that Indiana's going to keep it closer than the experts think, that it's going to be kind of a blowout? Like, just what is your gut feeling about how Indiana's going to do Friday night?
I have a feeling it'll be within reach, certainly for the first half and maybe for the first half of the second half. But I just think that Michigan State's size and their overall talent level is really going to wear Indiana down. And that's not a knock on Indiana. You're playing on the road at a team who on paper is the best or second best team in the country, just strictly on paper.
I mean, that is technically a knock on Indiana because we're not at that point yet, but.
Well, it's not a knock on them. That's just reality. I'm not punching them in the nether regions. I'm just saying it's, you know, that's a fact. And I'd say that about pretty much every other team in the country. So, you know, there's nothing embarrassing about that. But I think that, it starts on the defensive end. Everything starts there. They've just got to make life miserable for Michigan State, muck the game up, make it, you know, a slog, and then hopefully hit some shots on the other end and keep it close. Cause it's going to be a very difficult matchup for Indiana.
Andy, are you ready to shift up all of your brackets when the Hoosiers pull the upset?
That will be, I would enjoy doing that. But certainly I don't think anybody would predict it. I mean, maybe you will. I mean, it might not be the craziest thing you've ever predicted, but,
that would probably be the craziest thing I've ever predicted.
I don't know. Some of the at Wisconsin prediction, really any of those, quite frankly, probably would qualify. But, I think it'll be interesting to see what IU does early in the game. I mean, it sounds cliche to say, but the importance of those first few minutes, a Michigan State team that's probably going to be ready to get out and play against somebody other than one another after what, you know, we're all sure has been a pretty difficult week of practice and things like that, should be a pretty rowdy environment on a Friday night. So I think if they can kind of weather the storm, you know, those first few minutes and be able to fight back, you know, because they're going to get punched in the mouth at some point during the game. And so how do they respond to that? Just kind of keep it close, give themselves a chance down the stretch. I think what they've done defensively bodes well, because Michigan State has turned the ball over quite a bit. So turnovers are important, not only from IU standpoint, but also, you know, trying to force them from Michigan State. So it'll be a challenge, but I hope they can, you know, I think they can build some confidence by sticking in the game. I know that wasn't what anybody wanted to hear after the Duke game, at least what Archie didn't want to hear. But I think they'll come out and play well. I don't expect them to win, but I don't necessarily expect them to get blown out by 20 either.
Yeah, I think I'm in kind of the same boat. I don't think this will be a total blowout. I do think Michigan State will control the game for most of it, and certainly in the second half, and probably win comfortably, you know, the final 5 minutes, kind of maybe the inverse of kind of what Michigan did to them. But I think we'll be able to walk away from the game with some positives. Some of the performances up at Michigan State in recent years have been total throwaways, where you're just like, all right, that was over after 10 minutes and whatever. I don't think this will be that. I think the team has shown us enough to believe that. And anything more than that would obviously be a bonus, and hopefully that's what will happen. I think we'd all be very happy to be wrong about that. So coming up here on the Assembly Call, we're going to talk about the news this week that there may be a change to the transfer rule to make it less restrictive. We'll get into that, give our thoughts on it. That's coming up on the Assembly Call. If you are listening to the Assembly Call, go to assemblycall.com/join right now to learn how to subscribe to our email newsletter. If you want to get more out of being an IU basketball fan, then you need to be on our newsletter list. You will get our weekly Six Banner Sunday news roundups, as well as our post-game analysis emails. It is all free, and it will make you a smarter IU basketball fan. Again, the URL is assemblycall.com/join. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips, my co-hosts on the Assembly Call IU postgame show. Guys, news broke this week, and actually this came out, I think, several months ago that they were thinking about this, but there were some more details added to it this week. John Rothstein of FanRag Sports reported that basically they're looking at making the transfer rule less restrictive. So right now, obviously, if you transfer to another Division I school, you have to sit out a year, obviously, like Josh Newkirk did for Indiana a couple of years ago. And there's been a movement to make that less restrictive. And with whatever happens, it looks like there will be some kind of restrictions on it. You know, there may be some kind of GPA requirement. There'll probably be a small window, you know, a window of time during which time players can transfer. So it won't just be this open free-for-all that I think some people are thinking, and that's making some of the reactions on Twitter just crazy, where people are talking about this is going to, you know, ruin college basketball and change the game forever. I want to get your thoughts on whether you agree with this in general or not, without knowing what the full details will be, because I very strongly do. I think it's kind of absurd that players have to sit out that year after transferring. I mean, if they get themselves into a situation that is not right for them and they want to move to a new situation, why should they have to sit out that year? And I don't say this because I think that transferring is always good. In fact, I think a lot of times it's probably not the right decision, but there are some times when it is. And I don't feel like it is fair to penalize those guys for whom transferring is the right decision and make them sit out a year, especially when other students don't need to wait a year to participate in extracurricular activities when they transfer. And coaches and assistant coaches can move, obviously, freely and be coaching the next season without having to sit out. And so I think you have... Obviously, there will be a lot of collateral damage to a decision like this. It'll make life tougher on coaches. You know, mid-majors will probably have guys poached by bigger schools, on and on and on. And, you know, I don't think that necessarily all of those things are going to be good, but why should the athletes have to be the one who pay the price and have to sit out the year for all of these other externalities? So I just think that the athlete's interest in this case should be the one that's placed first and let the other stuff fall where it may. And we could have a much longer discussion about this, but that's kind of my quick hit thoughts on it. Andy, what are your thoughts on this idea for a rule change?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. I think, you know, some of the different parameters that have been thrown around, I think, protect against some of the concerns that people have. But ultimately, you know, what I don't like is the notion that, well, we're protecting these players from themselves because we, you know, so that they don't just, you know, willy-nilly transfer. Like, you don't, you know, in the end, this is all a business. If any of these people really cared about the players, you wouldn't have these scenarios where you've got a team playing 3 games in 6 days. And what does that mean from a classwork standpoint and all that stuff? It's like, that's obviously not really the focus. So it's easy to say, you know, oh, this is my concern, but that's ultimately kind of self-serving for most of the folks in the positions of power as part of this discussion. So I guess that's my big thing. I mean, people are going to make mistakes. They're going to make, you know, transfers will happen where somebody regrets it, but that happens today. And that doesn't, you know, is that any less likely to happen when you don't have to sit out of here? I guess I'm not really sure. If I'm going to make a bad decision and decide I'm fed up, is that really, I just don't know that that decision changes a whole lot. And obviously if people are, you know, doing that right up before the season or doing it 3 or 4 times, then yeah, that becomes problematic. But I think those are the things that they can control in some of those variables.
And remember, being pro a less restrictive transfer rule doesn't mean that you are pro transfer. It doesn't mean that you think everybody should transfer at the first sign of trouble. They are two totally different things. It just means that you believe the guy should have the option to do so without having to sit out a year based, you know, given the parameters of whatever the rule ends up being. I just wanted to clarify that because people mistake that sometimes.
Yeah. What I would say is one of the issues here is, okay, if you can transfer at any time and play the next year, are we still going to force schools to honor 4-year scholarships, or is it just a year to year thing? And a kid can basically open up and be recruited by other schools. Will schools have to recruit their own players back? I mean, I'm loath to be on the school side of things and the NCAA side of things, but you know, I mean, you could create essentially free agency every year. And I think that if you're creating that kind of free agency, that's inevitably going to lead to people getting paid. It's going to lead to the dark side of college basketball being even more prevalent. So I think there need to be some pretty specific parameters on it. You know,
it's going to lead to athletes making their market value is what it's going to lead to. It's just going to happen under the table.
and that's the problem. And I don't think you can do that and feel good about it. I think that it has to be out in the open. And I've been pro giving the kids money for a long time. I think the transfer rule is interesting, though. I think that, you know, let's say this. Let's say you decide to transfer in December. Like, you know, early on, like you don't play the full season. You decide to transfer in December. You should be eligible to play at the beginning of the next season. I definitely believe in that. But if you're just at the end of your year and you decide, well, my team's not going to be as good as next year. A lot of guys have jumped to the pros. You know, maybe I'll just leave. You know, you could be a starter and go from, you know, Davidson to Duke like Seth Curry did and play immediately. And, you know, I don't know if that's the right way to do things. That, yeah, well, my team's not going to be competitive next year. I played a lot this year. Let me go play somewhere else. I'll go to a rival. How about I'll go to a rival? You know, like, who's going to have a loaded team back next year? I'm just going to go. Like, you
okay,
know.
I don't necessarily like that as a fan, but should a player be restricted because it messes with what, you know, like, the entertainment
problem.
Value
what,
we get from the game?
What you're saying is, I think, from a moral perspective, if you look at it in a vacuum, I think you're right. That the kids should be able to play immediately and all that stuff. I think everybody would be like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But then when you look at the unintended consequences of doing that, the long-term unintended consequences, there are issues that would arise that might, you know, make it really negative. And I think that it's sort of, you know, everybody is for free speech like that. That's it. And so you think, oh yeah, unfettered free speech for everything. Sure. But then with that, you get, you know, people being threatened, you get, you know, yelling fire in a crowded theater. You've got to put restrictions on some things, even though they're
yes.
a good
and
idea.
And there should be parameters here. There should be restrictions.
I agree,
it shouldn't be a free
know,
for all.
I think we need to know what those parameters are. As you said, I think it's hard to judge it right now because we don't know what the rule will be.
Except that there are some people who think that it shouldn't happen no matter what. Like, that's the thing. They don't think under any circumstances players should be able to transfer without having to sit out that year.
Right. And I'm definitely not in that camp. Yeah. But at the same time, I do think, yeah, there need to be some parameters in there if you can make them. if you can't make them, you got to kind of keep it the same. If you can't put parameters on it that don't essentially turn it into free agency in college basketball, then, you know, like maybe you can transfer after your sophomore year, or you can, you know, I mean, like there's some kind of, you know, things in there where guys don't just go, okay, yeah, no, I'm just going to go.
No, there's a certain level, though. There's a certain level of assumption here that these kids are just, you know, immoral jerks who don't care about anything other than, I'm not saying that you're saying that. I mean, clearly you are, right. But I'm not saying
that. Yeah, of course.
I think that's like, you know, it implies that the kid can't make, the kid who at that point is an adult on some level, like,
yeah, stop calling
a decision
kids.
That is so selfish that. That
really?
They yes. No really?
One, they, yes. They take no one else's thoughts into kids. Account. And so I think that seems to be like the working assumption of like, oh, I'm going to go and stick it to somebody, or I'm going to leave because, I mean, we see people, you know, we see Miles Bridges come back this year as an example. And by the same token, you see guys make terrible decisions to go to the NBA. So you're not able to prevent either of those things. So I think, sure. I think that's the part that's hard is it's like, well, let's attempt to give these guys some credit. Let's put parameters around it. And if it doesn't work, then try to fix the parameters or whatever else. But there's a lot of other things to me that are more harmful to the quote unquote student athletes than this would be that don't get addressed. And yet this is the hill that everybody wants, that coaches want to die on because they're the ones who are ultimately most impacted by it.
Yeah. And I agree with you on that. I completely agree with you on that. I think the kids should be able to make their own choices. And yes, they are kids. I'm sorry. Nowadays, this isn't 1950. At 18, you're not,
they're not kids. They're young adults. If you want to call them that, but they're not kids.
I think a young adult is a kid. I was a kid.
Those are two different things. I'm just saying they deserve more respect than just thinking they're a kid. Cause everybody says these kids are just going to transfer at the first sign of trouble and they paint everybody with a broad brush. No, I'm saying, no, not you. But these are the arguments that I've been getting all day long. And what I'm saying is I think we deserve to give these young adults a little bit more credit. And if you want to give them maybe more education about why they shouldn't transfer, fine, make that part of it. But I just think, like Andy said, I just think these guys get discussed as if they are just going to blow with the wind and can't make decisions on their own and shouldn't have the ability to do it, is what I'm saying.
Yep. What you're doing is you're taking the hardline position of somebody and making that the argument you're arguing against, when I would guarantee you that most people's opinions on this are pretty nuanced and in the middle. And
not the coaches. These are the arguments that coaches are making.
Of course the coaches are going to make that argument. They're the ones who recruit these kids and spend all these hours, you know, bringing them into campus. They're not the ones we judge this. I want to know, you know, experts' opinions. That's the people I want to talk to. I don't think the coaches are an interested party. You can't listen to them and think, oh, well, that's the other argument. I don't think that's fair. I think you have to listen to people who have studied this.
Well, you have people like Evan Daniels who says you can't change my mind on this. He is dead set that the transfer rule shouldn't change, and you can't change my mind on this. Even if you present evidence, I guess you can't. That's what I'm saying, though. There are these hardliners out there, and they frame it as if these quote unquote kids just aren't capable of making this decision. And
let me get on to this kids thing real quick, like, because you seem to be really dying on that hill. When somebody is 17, in high school, they're a kid. When they turn the day they turn 18, they don't all of a sudden become way more mature.
Okay, but
they're still kids. Listen to me. They're still kids.
Is not as important as how you treat somebody, and understanding that a lot of times people will rise to the level of your expectation. So if we think of them as kids and think that they're not capable of making these decisions, I just think that that is doing them a disservice and not what should be done in an educational setting, is what I'm saying.
Well, I never said they weren't capable of making that decision. They obviously are.
Okay, let's not get caught up in the semantics. That's the idea that I'm trying to get across.
Well, don't yell at me about saying they're kids. I think they're kids. That's why, you know, I think a young adult is still a kid to me. I think until you're out of college, you're pretty much still a kid. I mean, I've been on a college campus. I know the maturity level these days. But
we're going to have to wrap this up soon, and we're not going to have a fourth segment.
I know. What I will say is that I think that we have to know the details before we can really judge this plan.
Yes, I agree.
We have to know what the actual text of the rule is going to say, and it has to be there to protect, you know, everybody involved, I think, including the kids, and it has to be in their best interest. I agree, but I think that in some ways their best interest would not necessarily be unfettered, you know, just open the floodgates. I think there have to be some rules.
I agree, and I think it needs to be a compromise. So I don't want my position to be misstated, because what is in the best interest of the athlete is also in part what's in the best interest of the sport. So you do have to make a compromise that doesn't just totally kill the sport, and I just happen to think that people are overblowing how much of a negative impact this would be. Okay, we got to get out of here quickly. When we come back with our final few minutes, we got a bunch of questions that you all send us. We will get through as many as we can. Or maybe Ryan and I will just fight more about whether college athletes are young adults or kids. That's coming up.
I'm up for that.
You're listening to The Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips, wrapping up another week of talking IU basketball. Obviously, that last segment went a little bit long, so we don't have as much time as we normally do to get to questions, so we're just going to have time to hit up a couple, although on our YouTube broadcast, we'll answer the other ones. So you can always go check out the archived YouTube video and find those. Guys, I did tease the question about where will Romeo go. Someone said, brass tacks, where do you think he ends up? I will just say, to me, it seems right now like all three of his final candidates are equal. So given the fact that Indiana is only 33% of that, it would seem to me more likely that he ends up at Kansas or Vanderbilt. But I have no strong feeling either way. No inside information, obviously. Do you guys have strong feelings about Romeo, or do you just want to pass on that?
I think he stays home. I think he goes to Indiana.
I will answer what I want him to do, which is go to Indiana. I don't really know. I mean, Vanderbilt has not played all that well this year at all. They do have some recruits going in, but, I think people express concern about IU in that regard with how they got started. I think you'd have to express similar concerns with Vanderbilt. So even though some of the chatter's there, I hold out hope that it'll come to IU.
Yeah, I certainly hold out hope. And again, like I said in the banner moment, I think him coming Sunday was a good sign. Love this question from our buddy Chris, who runs the IU Artifacts account. Your favorite IU JUCO of all time? I mean, I think the clear answer here, Andy, is
got to be Keith Smart. I would think
Keith Smart or Dean Garrett. Really, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you had those guys. I mean, we kind of threw out, like, you know, William Gladness was one who I think, as we looked, had, you know, maybe better stats than we thought and things like that. But I think Smart feels like the one from a memory perspective. And if anyone says Devin Dumas, then we're just going to have to shut this down.
Any love for Freddie?
No, he hasn't done enough in his career. No, I mean, I like Freddie, but my favorite came from Georgia Perimeter College. Can anybody name him?
Georgia Perimeter College? See, let me guess. Did he play with Marco Killingsworth?
He did.
Shocking.
Earl Callaway, a Bulgarian basketball player. I liked Earl personally. I really liked him. So he went to New Mexico State, then Georgia Perimeter College, and then Indiana in 2005. He is now playing in the Turkish League. It was an honorable mention All Big Ten in 2007. Has played in Croatia. He's played in pretty much everywhere in Europe.
Yeah.
And he also played.
He did have some moments. Was Guitmark Michel? Was he a JUCO or was
I don't believe so. No. Harris Mujezinovic was, though, and he was awesome.
I feel like Guy-Marc Michel was maybe a JUCO.
He never played for Indiana.
Oh, Guy-Marc Michel was
that's
a JUCO.
True. All right. Yes, but I mean, clearly.
We have 10 seconds left.
Okay, we can't waste on
Earl Callaway.
No, Keith Smart is the correct answer, but Earl Callaway is a fine honorable mention. So that'll work. Okay, we got to go.
I know usually for these Assembly Call radio broadcasts, we end the podcast where the radio show recording actually ends. But when we record these live on YouTube, a lot of times we, you know, go on for a little while after, and there's obviously always banter in between the segments. And so that's one reason why subscribing to us on YouTube is good if you want to get, I guess, the full Assembly Call experience, because there is content there on those archived YouTube videos or when you watch live that we don't normally put on the podcast. But last night we lingered for a good 25 minutes, 30 minutes after the actual recording was done. I remarked to Andy afterwards, it was a real smart way to begin our 12 live shows and 23-day stretch by going for a half hour longer than usual for the first one, really pacing ourselves well. But I don't know, I thought a lot of it was pretty entertaining content. And it was basically just answering a lot of the Twitter questions and Slack questions that we had gotten. So I know some of you who listen on the podcast, submit those questions and are waiting to hear those answers. So I wanted you to get a chance to hear those answers. So what you hear now is the content that came while we were live on YouTube, but after we had finished the recording for the radio show and the podcast episode. So I will play all of that now. And just know that if you want to get this content regularly, I won't always put it on the podcast, but it'll always be there on the archived YouTube versions and when you watch live. So without further ado, here's everything that we talked about after segment four.
Talked about Earl Callaway for a minute and never mentioned his mustache.
We missed the chance to throw in Tijon. And I did like Ryan, though, reading us a brief history of what Earl Callaway has been up to since he was at IU.
Yeah. That's all I have.
I did not expect that segment to go there, but this is what happens.
He's a naturalized
Earl enjoys reading, bike riding.
Naturalized Bulgarian citizen now.
Wow.
I don't know why, but maybe just to get a European passport. I don't know.
All right, so there's a few other questions. I want to at least hit these. Ryan, you can answer one.
You want to save them for next week?
No, because, I mean, some of them I guess we can, but I mean, like Mike asked, which Newkirk do we think will show up? He's been really good the last two games.
He's going to have a tough time dealing with the physicality of those guards, but I think you see a lot of effort out of him. I don't know if he's going to make shots.
I think Winston is a smart player, but he's not uber athletic. Like, he's not going to overwhelm him with athleticism. So I think that helps.
Yeah. Hopefully Josh can just cut down the turnovers, and I think he will need to make a few open threes. So if he can hit those, that'd be huge. All right, Andy,
not to give Ryan too much credit, but Ryan talked about how good Newkirk's shot looked from the top of the key, and like almost right away in the Northwestern game, that's exactly where he hit one from. So
straight on, he's money from everywhere else. It's like,
I think if IU could construct a scenario where they have Newkirk at the top of the key, Rojo on the wing, and Hartman in the corner, it feels like they could, you know, really improve their 3-point percentages, because those guys all kind of have like a defined spot.
They do.
Like the old NBA Jam thing where you had like a heat zone on the court.
Oh yes. Okay. At the end of the year, this is from Jordan. At the end of the year, what would constitute a successful season short of pulling off an NCAA bid? Obviously, adjusting expectations from preseason to midseason.
11-7, 12-6 in the Big Ten would be huge. Best case scenario, but I'd say 11-7 would be good.
That would constitute successful. I mean, even if they go 9-9, I mean 8-10. Do you think they can be successful?
It depends on who they beat and are they getting better. I mean, I don't think it's just the record. I think it's also how they look. Are they getting better? Are the younger guys who are going to be back improving, or are they? Is it just kind of a blah finish where you kind of back into it?
I think NIT is now the definition of successful. I mean, I think you got to at least make the NIT at this point, because if you don't make NIT, that means you really finish.
But I don't know if that's considered being successful.
I think it would be now, given where things were.
But ultimately, that's what probably finishing 11-7 in the Big Ten would get you. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think, a lot of times the teams, NIT is not viewed as, and I don't know that this team would be excited to play there, but I think you can also use it to,
of course,
you
get extra practice time,
springboard into something. And I think you could frame it up in a way, maybe even for the seniors. I think you could frame it up in a way, even to the team, that, this is a good opportunity to really kind of build on the momentum that they've hopefully will continue over the remainder of the season. As opposed to, last year where it was like, well, this is terrible. This is a huge disappointment and let's just shut this thing down.
It'd be another great opportunity to play a home game on the road. That's for sure. So you always love that.
Who would ever agree to that?
Chad in the chat says, tonight during After Dark, Jared and Ryan will fight it out in a baby pool of Upland. And then the next comment is, while Andy plays with a voodoo Vikings doll.
True.
Okay.
If I was Andy, I would have been really excited about the finish of that game, though. I would have rather faced Minnesota than the Saints. I think the Saints
I wrestled with that. I wrestled with that decision as it went down. I've been trying to talk myself into either one. The Saints, my only thought was that you get them out of the dome and maybe they have a defense that Nick Foles could do something against, versus this game is assuredly going to be a defensive slugfest. And you just hope that
your defense,
one of the Case Keenum throws off his back foot will find its way into the waiting arms of Michael Jenkins or of Malcolm Jenkins.
Okay. This is from JD. I think when we talk about next year's Hoosiers, the recruiting class, Finnessy, Demezi, Jerome, Jake, and potentially Romeo, it's usually the hot topic. However, I think the addition of Race Thompson is going to be a huge piece. Can you talk about Race, his game, and the redshirt benefit? Obviously, none of us have seen Race play, so it's hard to really give insight. Everything you hear has been positive. But I feel like every guy who's redshirting, like Newkirk, all you heard were like these positive reviews that he was just dominating practices. So it's tough to really know what you're really getting there, but based on the kind of player he was in high school and what he needed to improve, which was his body and his conditioning and his athleticism, you certainly expect that he'll have improved some of that, and he'll have had a year in the system obviously to learn the defense. So I think it's going to be really big, and I think he's going to be a guy who's going to play minutes, be a rotation piece at a minimum next year and possibly more. So I'm really optimistic about him, and it's one of those kind of fun things. He doesn't often get talked about. We forget about him because he's a redshirt. And then it's like, he's going to be there next year. And you're like,
whoa, where'd this guy come from? Oh yeah, we have another 4-star ready to play. So it's kind of exciting from that standpoint.
Yeah, I think that one of the things about those guys is why they dominate in practice, red shirts, and you mentioned this, is they don't have to play in games, so they're well-rested. You know, I mean, like, so practice is their game. That's what they get up for. And sometimes they don't even travel with the team, so they don't have to deal with that either. It depends on the guy, it depends on the year, but and the coach. But I would also say about Race, I think that his upside, to me, looks like Juwan Morgan's did coming out of high school. I think that he's a guy who's got size, he's got length, he can play on the inside, but he also
has skilled offensively.
I think he can be. I don't think it, you know, it's, and Juwan wasn't that skilled coming out, but you saw the potential. He wasn't a finished product. He wasn't OG raw, and he wasn't Victor Oladipo raw, but he wasn't what he is now and his ability to finish around the rim and all that stuff. I think Race can finish around the rim right now, but he's got to develop a jumper. And look, I mean, Juwan still struggles with his jumper at this point, but I think that is his upside offensively, is a guy like that. I mean, he could certainly step out on the perimeter. He has a good release on his shot, but the one thing he's missing for me is that he fades back a lot on his shot. And again, a high school player who doesn't have a perfect shot is pretty much the norm. So I think that there's things to improve there, and I'm sure they've got him working on that. But yeah, I think he's a very talented guy. I like him a lot as a guy coming in next year to compete for minutes, and we'll need him because he's got some size and some length too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, it's, you know, they're certainly going to lose things in the front court with Colin, Juwan, Freddie, all, or not Juwan. Well, maybe according to
Ryan. That's the next question, is who do we think will be here next year?
Well, yeah. But so anyway, so
you can merge those together if you want to.
But you lose a little bit of, you certainly lose some front court depth. And I think the reasons that we have all said that maybe Justin Smith and Clifton Moore haven't been playing as much as maybe people would like, expect, want, whatever you want to say, is adjustment to the physicality of the game and understanding where they need to be defensively. And I think he is able to, you know, get some of that under his belt this year. So I think it's certainly a positive in my eyes.
So there is no reason for Juwan not to test the waters and put his name in. So right. I think we all agree that'll happen. What, I mean, Ryan, you were kind of the first one to say that this was a possibility. You know, he's not showing up on any top 100 lists. I always look to just see if he's even entering the radar screen of draft analysts. He really isn't yet, but that doesn't
mean
he's
not on the radar screen.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean if he keeps playing well or, you know, shoots threes well down the stretch that he couldn't get there. I mean, do you think there's a legitimate shot of him actually going?
I honestly don't know. I think that if you look at the way he's improved, you would say that maybe another year would really help. But if you really truly look at it, he's going to have a big performance against a big opponent to get on radar screens. I mean,
Friday night.
Yeah, and OG Anunoby didn't really blow up on draft boards until he showed up against Kentucky in the NCAA tournament and was all over the place. I mean, that's when people were like, oh, wow, this guy could be a lottery pick, you know? And before that, I think that we saw elements of that. But, I mean, there were people who thought he should leave after his freshman year because of that one performance. So he's going to have a big performance against a guy scouts or a team, a guy or a team that scouts are watching. Or he's going to have to go to the combine and show up. And you can go to the combine now and pull yourself out. So if he gets a combine invite and goes and, you know, balls out in those scrimmages, then yeah, I think that he'll get on some lists. But I mean, he's certainly looking at being a second round pick, but these days a second round pick isn't a death sentence, you know, to your career like it used to be. Now you can go to the G League, you can have a two-way contract where you go up and down, and we've seen Troy Williams, we've seen Yogi Ferrell, we've seen those guys, you know, work a G League contract into a full-time playing career. So it can happen. And certainly I think Thomas Bryant is on that path as well. The Lakers love him, and he's been dominating in the G League for them. So certainly that possibility exists. I'm not sure right now that he's drafted, but I don't know. It depends, you know, how does he fit into the roster? How does he feel about his first year under Archie? All that stuff. There's going to be so many factors that go into it.
I guess my thought on that is I still have a hard time thinking it'll happen, but I hope it does. Because if he does go, then that means he probably did blow up. He probably got some good feedback, and that'd be awesome for him. And obviously that's his goal. And I love it when guys can get there, you know, a year prior than maybe they think they can. So it would be, you know, tough for the team, and he'd be a huge loss for last year. But I think it would be fantastic if it happened. So We will see. If the season were to end today, other than the current seniors, who do you expect to not be on the team? That really would require us to speculate on transfers.
We don't do that.
We don't want to do that because, I mean, it's all speculation. And we just, I mean, you know, Juwan's a different story. That's an NBA decision. So that's, there's, you know, you can actually see things on the court and try and project it. But speculating on transfers doesn't really do anybody any good. This question was interesting from Jeremy. I'd like to hear thoughts on attendance for home games this year. It seems down. Is it an issue across the entire landscape of college basketball, or is it an IU thing? So I can talk real quick about the reasons why IU's attendance might be a little bit down. I'll be interested to see what people say in the chat. Do either of you guys know if it is a college basketball-wide thing? Are there any trends here?
I think it's a sports-wide thing. I think that more people are deciding to save money and stay home, and you know, every game is televised. You know, it's not
and
like
broadcast post game shows afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that I think that sports wide, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, everything, you're seeing lower home attendance, especially if you're the Chargers. But it's
bam.
I think that you're seeing lower home attendance because, again, it's expensive to go to games. You got to drive, you got to park, you got to, you know, if you got families, sometimes the games start later than they used to, all that stuff because of television rights. And then, you know, again, everything's on television. You have, you know, a 50-inch TV in your room with the best view that you're going to get, and it's free, you know, or whatever the price of cable is. So I think that that has a lot to do with it. I think maybe also we just have seen a reversal of priorities where that's not something that's a priority for a lot of people, is spending money on sports as cost of living has gone up everywhere. So I think that you'll get a switch and it'll go back to, you know, higher attendance stuff. But again, I mean, you've also got to create a situation on campus where you make sure all the students are showing up. And yeah. I think that's on Indiana. That's not on the fans. That's on Indiana. And it's not necessarily on the team. I think it's on the people at the school punishing people. If you bought season tickets and you're not showing up to games, and there are people who don't get season tickets, you know, you should be dropped off the list for the next year. If you bought
Absolutely.
Season tickets and you're not going, then you should be taken off the list. I think that, you know, and they can check who's there and who's not by when they scan your ticket, you know, and if you're a student and you bought tickets and you're not going, don't buy tickets. You know, and they're still selling all of them. It's just a matter of people showing up and going. And I don't care if you got a
balcony. Damn kids.
Yeah, they're kids, not young adults. but I would say that also, you know, if you got balcony seats, I know it sucks. We all had to sit through balcony games. It sucked, but we went and we were loud. And you know what? Assembly Hall is a much nicer experience than it was when I went there now. You know, so I don't care. Go and show up and be loud and do it every week.
I still remember Chad Austin beating Indiana on a last second shot, watching from the balcony.
I know exactly what shot
you're talking about. I was in the main level, but I had the perfect view to see the shot where it was going to go in when he took it from the side. I was like, that freaking guy.
Well,
this really took a negative turn. That was,
I saw George Leach.
Let's talk about Earl Callaway again.
I saw George Leach foul. Who was it?
Chris Humphreys?
Humphreys, 96 feet from the basket and lose a game from the last seat.
This is the stuff that I remember. It sticks with you. You can't.
By the way, I'm 6'3". We've talked about this with my height before. I'm 6'3". So going into the top row of the balcony, I mean, I looked like Lurch because it was like five. It's built for someone who's like 5'6". And I was legitimately in the last seat in the corner. My buddy and I had the seat next to the last seat and the last seat in the back corner of the last row of the balcony. And I sat through that damn game. I couldn't stand up once because of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, a lot
little
of people
did you know that some years later, you'd be sitting courtside for the Marco Killingsworth dunk.
Oh, man. It's
only
just
you knew then.
Yeah,
only
tell us that story sometime.
Okay, I will tell you that. I'll tell you that was a great sports moment. Another great sports moment was in the playoffs, watching Trevor Hoffman come out to Hell's Bells in a playoff game at a packed then Qualcomm Stadium with like 80,000 of my closest friends screaming as Hell's Bells played in the background. Oh, that was amazing. Unbelievable. Greatest sports moment. There's one.
Back to Indiana basketball.
Sorry.
A lot of people echoing what you're saying about students, and that, you know, student attendance being down is a big reason why. And so I agree with everything that you just said. And I do think it's incumbent upon, you know, the university and marketing department, everybody on campus to get people excited. But I think, you know, some of the reasons, you know, why that may be is obviously the team was bad last season. So that, you know, kills a little bit of your momentum.
The game times suck too. I mean, you know,
the game times haven't been great.
If this is a home game, if tomorrow was a home game on a Friday at 7, nobody would be going because people go home on weekends. People go back up to Indy. There's traffic. Like, I mean, you know, I don't like what the Big Ten is doing with scheduling. I think that's pretty clear. I think
it's hurting the product inside the arena.
I agree.
Yes, it definitely is. You know, I also think the Indiana State and Fort Wayne games killed some excitement, you know, it killed some momentum. And, you know, look, so far outside of the Duke game, there just haven't been that many big draws to get people really, really excited. And if the team itself isn't that great or, you know, a top 25 team, all that contributes to it. So I think everything that we just said contributes to it. And all it will take is Indiana, you know, getting Romeo Langford or getting back in the top 25, winning consistently. And I think you'll see that excitement get back. It's just maybe been a little bit slower than we all thought for Archie's first season.
Well, and I think if you probably figure, you know, I mean, students that are in college now, I probably don't want to think about the year in which they would be born. But I mean, has IU really been very good in their lifetime versus
Tom Crean won 2 Big Ten titles in 4 years.
Well, that's I've heard that. I wish that got more attention. But just in terms of like, you know, it was unfathomable to me when I was there to you know, to miss those. But I also, you know, grew up with some of the, you know, the greatest teams that have, you know, that have been there, you know, outside of the teams in the mid-70s, you know, watching some of those teams that, you know, that I kind of grew up on. Like, but I don't know that I would argue that many students now haven't had that same experience either. It isn't a big deal or for whatever else. So I think that also contributes to it. But I would agree that if you're going to get the tickets, then you might as well go. But I think there's probably a lot of, I mean, I think all the things you said, Jared, are true. I think, Ryan, what you said about sports in general is probably accurate.
Not even you might as well go. There should be some legitimate pressure for you to go. Like, you know, it should be more than that.
I mean, honestly,
I like Ryan's idea of punishing people that don't go. I mean, public shaming, whatever.
I mean, they should be, you know, run out of the town on a rail if you're not gonna, you know. And if you guys are history buffs and know what being run out of town on a rail is, you really like that visual. Anyway, I think that it's, you do have to have some kind of punishment. I mean, if you're a student and you can't go, like if you say, look, I'm on the season ticket list, but I've got class this year, so I'll surrender these as long as I can stay on the list for next year or something. It's something like that. I've got like night classes and I can't go. You know, that's understandable. But I mean, if you're just buying the tickets and then you're not going, that's just stupid. And it's pointless. And look, you're clearly going to fail as an adult because you don't understand economics. So you shouldn't buy something you're not going to use. You're just going to add to this country's problems.
And it actually hurts the team. It hurts your school because in college basketball, like the arena, the fans make a difference. I mean, it really does. So
especially in an arena like Assembly Hall that is like a mausoleum when it's quiet, and when it's loud, it's amazing. But the way that arena is designed is when it's quiet, it is, you know, almost a detriment to the team, you know, because of how quiet it gets. Look, I understand Assembly Hall. I have said many times, I think they need a new arena. I think that the balcony is ridiculous. I think that it ruins the game for a lot of people. I don't think it's a great place to watch a basketball game as far as actually watching the game goes. I think that the atmosphere is great, but I think the atmosphere is created by the fans, not the arena. So I've said many times, I think that they need a new arena with better sight lines and all that stuff. Clearly, they don't listen to what I say because they just spent a lot of money renovating what I think is a, you know, an old building that needs a replacement. And I think that if other schools at our level are getting new buildings, I don't understand why Indiana can't do one, but I get it. It's not perfect, but it's all you've got. You know, it's all we've got. And it's the arena that we have to live and deal with. And it's the only place you get to go to see Indiana games. And if you're a student who's there for 4 years, that's only 4 years you're going to get tickets. So it's a limited number of games that you have a chance to go see them play.
Yeah. I don't think we'll be talking about this in 2 years. I think we'll be back winning, and I think the things will be packed again because the excitement will be there. So
I'll still be talking about wanting to replace Assembly
Hall. Well, you've been talking about that since we started the show.
I'm sorry, I'm right.
And you can't be convinced otherwise?
No, absolutely not. Dude, if Maryland and Michigan State and schools like that can get new arenas within the last however long, you know, there's no reason that Indiana can't and shouldn't. And those arenas are built.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.